mix session number 11206, real 6.
Mr. T. Thornthwaite, Reel 6. Have you any further memories of India, Mr. Thornthwaite?
I mentioned before we used to do a period at Doolally and then a period at Bombay and keep on changing round because Doolally was, in those days, was only a matter of 6 huts and there was nothing to do, and that's where the Doolally tap came from in the early days. I remember once I went on a weekend leave from Doolally. We could wear civilian clothes then after you had so much service, and I bought a suit, had a suit made, and I went down to Bombay on this weekend leave. As I was dressed as a civilian, I thought, well, I'll go in this green hotel at the Gateway of India. It's known by all people in the forces, the officers mainly. I went in there, and obviously everybody was drinking beer, and they were all officers and everything, and I was only a private, and I was amongst them. So I started drinking whiskey as well. And I was drinking whiskey, and I always remember afterwards vaguely hearing a woman singing in the Cumbria. That's about all. I remember I went out outside, and there was Gateway Venue was there, and had the steps down to the sea. And I went down there to sober up, I think, and I sat on the steps. And the next thing I knew, there was somebody shaking me, and the tide was up to about my knees. It wasn't waves, it was just a gradually increase. And I was sitting up in wasting water with my new suit on. At any rate, I managed to squeeze the trousers out and that, and got back into Bombay and went to the station and got on the train back for Doolally. We travelled second class, because the officers was first class, and actually that's all we could afford. And I remember it was full of all the Indians' families and all the gear and everything, and got back to Doolally and carried on from there.
What kind of relationship did the British soldier have with the Indian native?
Well, you had the sort of two classes. You had the more or less a coolie class. The low caste with a different caste anyway, with a thing on their forehead and all the road sweepers and everybody there. And then you had the educated class, which we didn't have much to do with. The what we call half chats, that's in the middle, they're half white and half, they're maybe white parents and Indian mother, vice versa. They were about our class, but. Unfortunately, when I look back, you know, we trapped the Indian as just, you know, the lowest of the lowest. I mean, as I told you about the tea wallers, how we cheated them, and the Dobie wallers and all these, and the people that was looking after the toilets. But there was no aggression attached to it. It's the way they lived. I mean, all they had was a little bit rough, your mat or some blooming thing. And at night, they just put it down under the arches in Bombay and went to sleep. They had no proper place of abode. And when you're coming back, you used to have to step over them to come back, because more times than if we walked back. But there was never any trouble with them. Before I went to India, there was a lot of trouble with caste warfare, and the army was brought out to deal with them. But we never had any trouble like that. But we got on all right, I suppose. We had a lot of Indians working in the camp, all different jobs. They'd done all the dirty work.
Mm-hmm. When did you go to Sudan?
Well, in the 4th of February 1937, the battalion sailed for Sudan. I think it was the HMS Lancaster. That was sunk during the war, I believe, that it was a troop ship. And we left India on that date, as I said. I always remember, I looked back at the Gateway of India as we sailed away, and I thought, well, I'll never see that again. But peculiarly enough, I did. I seen it again in our further travels. And we sailed from there to the Sudan. We embarked at Port Sudan, and we got on this. It wasn't a troop train. I don't know what kind of train it was, but it was pulled up on the edge of the desert there in a little town affair. And they didn't have windows in the glass. They had shutters, like slotted things you put down for to keep the glare of the sun out. And unfortunately, it didn't stop the sand coming in. And the seats were just hard lattice seats. I thought they might have been built specially for troops, but I can't think so. You know, the number of troops is going to travel that distance from Port Sudan to the Sudan to Khartoum. Anyway, it was a very boring journey sitting there and getting covered in dust and everything. And we eventually ended up in Khartoum itself. We all got off the train and lined up on the side of the railway. And the NCOs come round and says, anyone can drive. No, we wonder what they meant, anybody can drive. Well, seemingly there was a few army trucks there belonged to the other regiment that was moving out. The Lancashire Fusiliers, I think. So everybody's putting their hands out, up. Of course, when they got on these trucks, half of them couldn't drive at all, and they were knocking blooming posts down left, right and centre. We had to march into the actual barracks, and we marched in. As we went into the camp, here's a model of a troop ship in front of the barrack block, and it was about 6 foot long, and on the funnel there was smoke coming out the funnel, and on the front it had a little board, your turn next. And this is the thing that was carried on for years and years, seemingly, beforehand. After the other regiment had left and we got a stomach in the camp, we took that down and turned the board over when it had our turn next, you see. And then we turned it back again when the next, and it went on like that year after year.
What was your barrack accommodation like?
Well, there were large, very large barrack rooms in the Sudan. There was about, let's see, there'd be about 30 barrack rooms for the whole battalion. They were very high, and they had big, thick walls, stone walls, about 3 foot thick. And again, shutters on instead of glass on the dome. And what used to happen in the afternoon, everybody used to go to bed in the afternoon there in Khartoum. Then you shut close the shutters, shut the big doors, and put these fans on. And it used to get very cold for the afternoon. The reason why I went to bed in the afternoon is because we used to do our training. At 3:30 to 4 o'clock in the morning, we used to get up when it was cool and go out in the desert and do your battalion training or whatever it was in the time. So I always went to bed in the afternoon, and then at 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you have your tea, and then you start the... Everybody had to do sports. Everybody had to do some form of sports. We had pitches there, and they kept the pitches going for hockey. They used to flood them at night. And then during the day they used to dry out and we'd use them, and then they'd flood them again at night, and that's the only way they kept the things going.
These were grass pitches, were they?
Yes, with the grass, because I mean it was all sand, but this was really, you know, it was kept going by the water. And we played a lot of sport there. For all it was very hot, they reckon it was 120 in the shade.
Who were you playing against? What kind of sports were you taking part in?
Well, there was in the platoon side, that's in the barrack room, we used to organise at night five-a-side hockey. We had a swimming pool there next to the Nile, and I used to spend a lot of time in there. I used to play water polo. We used to go up the Nile crocodile shooting, up to where the White Nile and the Blue Nile joined. Go up there on a day trip, crocodile shooting. You could hire camels. The lads used to hire camels and used to tie them up outside the barrack room at the outside. They had a, all the barracks had a veranda on the side. As I say, 4 o'clock in the morning, we used to go out into the desert and do our battalion training.
What form did that take? What kind of training was that?
Well, it's manoeuvres, moving companies around into positions. Well, of course, it was totally different from India for the simple reason. In India, you had the hills and whatnot, and in the desert, it was just one flat surface. I mean, it was a sand, but it was like a gravel, and it was just flat. I mean, you could see 20 miles practically, you know. So a lot of it had to be imaginary training because you had to imagine this was a hill or a mountain when they were positioning companies for the different actions and whatnot. And I used to sit under the trees and do Lewis gun training and lectures and sand table lectures and things like that. And there was no English, there was no married quarters there, they weren't allowed. They weren't allowed to stay. Because just before we went there, they used to wear spine pads to protect the spine from the sun. And they got sixpence a day extra money on top of your normal wage. But when we went there, they'd been stopped, unfortunately. All you had to do, all you had was your daily training, going to bed in the afternoon, sports at night, and then just sit and talk. You just sat on the verandas and talked until it was dark, and you went to bed.
What did they call the barracks?
I can't remember. I can't remember the name of the barracks. Yeah. I know that across the Nile on the other side there was a Scottish regiment and their barracks over there, but we never seen anything of them. Some nights I used to go, down to the town itself, but there was very little there. There was residential quarters, the local people, and there was one main road, the Tarmac Hadding Road, that went about 300 yards and then stopped, and you come to the desert. I could never understand why there's a road then in the desert, but anyway, that was in the main part of town. The rest of the town was just like muddy sort of road with mud walls. A few shops. One thing used to stand out in my mind there was Gordon's Monument. When you're walking back when the moonlight, you could see it standing up on his horse up on the top. But I used to go around there, and I mean, it was my 21st birthday. I had my civvy suit that I brought from India, and I went down to Khartoum to celebrate my 21st birthday. When he went in these little cafe affair, every time he bought a drink, they brought a tray with nuts and lettuce and dates and everything like that on. And no matter how many drinks you had, it was repeated all the time until you were covered in trays of all this stuff. Anyway, I had a good drink, but there was nothing else to do, so there was one cavalry in the Saddam, and it was out of bounds to everybody other than the officers only. So I was passing there, and I thought, well, nobody know I'm in civilian clothes, because there was civilians went in there as well, besides the officers and that. So I decided to go in, and I went in, and as you went in the entrance, you come to an open area with a stage. I went, and the waiter showed me, I sat down, ordered a beer. I was drinking the beer, and the cabaret started. Well, the girls in the cabaret were French, American, English, or a mixture of all from all over the world. They ended up there, and I think it was the lowest part. They got themselves into debt, and they could never move away from there, and they become lower and lower in their standards and what they did for their living. Anyway, I watched the cabaret, and when they finished, I said to the waiter, they indicate one, I go, oh, she'd like to come and join me, and she'd come and join me at the table. Of course, as I say, I was in civilian clothes, and I felt quite important, until I asked her what she'd like to drink, and she said something. And I got a drink and a waiter, and I just managed to pay for it. I hadn't another, it was hackers. I didn't have one more hacker left. My pockets was empty. I sat there dreading if she's going to say she wanted another one. Anyway, and I was sitting there, the waiter came up, and he whispered to me that the police, the red cap, was at the door. The police, the civilian police was at the door. And he must have known that I wasn't an officer and that, and he was telling me, so he says, if you follow me, I'll show you the way out. Out the back of the place. So I went out the back, and he had these low walls about 3 foot, 4 foot high, just of mud they were, and that was like the boundary of the premises. And I went out and over there, and I went down this sort of alleyway with a mud road, and I seen the glint of buckles at the bottom. And I thought, well, the police must have come round and they're coming up the dump. So I looked around, I couldn't go back into the door, and so on the other side was another low wall, so I jumped over it, and there was such a commotion. There, the residential people there, they slept outside with the hot weather. And when I jumped over, I landed them in of a bed. And it turned out afterwards, there was a Frenchman and his wife, and I couldn't understand French, and I was trying to explain what had happened with them. But eventually, anyway, the police came, and I was taken away to this little police station in Carthorne itself. I tried to explain what had happened to them. So they put me in a form of cell, but the front of one wall of the cell had bars in, and the bars was open to the main street. And the people, just like a monkey in a cage, the people passing could look at you through the bars, and you know, I was going mad sitting there. Nearly. I was in till next morning, till 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and I tried to get these people to see what would happen. Nothing. They kept me there all day, and then at 5 o'clock at night, let me go back to camp. Of course, when I went back to camp, I was put in the guard room. I was a Lance Corporal at the time, and I was put in the guard room, and eventually went in front of the CO, and I lost my tape. And I learnt then that they'd been told the day before that I was in here, and the CO decided to leave me there. He says, it'll do him a world of good, leave him.
Did you and the other troops feel any resentment to the fact that officers could go to places you weren't allowed to go to?
Well, there was a certain amount of resentment, but we realised we couldn't afford it. Eh? I mean, it was only because of my birthday and I'd been drinking that I wondered. But normally it wouldn't interest you at all for the simple reason that, as I say, we couldn't afford that. The officers used to hold parties in the officers' mess in the car room. And they used to invite these girls up to the mess to give some life to the parties. And at one time, I was asked to do waitering on when these parties was on, and I had a tray with all cocktails thrown around. And some of the sights I've seen there were the young officers making these girls stand on their hands and whatnot. As I say, there was no women, English women, there's no married quarters or nothing there. They weren't allowed. But there was a few Italians and French and odd civilians down there. And there was a music shop. I went in there and there was a young girl there and talking to her. And I bought a mandolin. And I couldn't play a mandolin. I couldn't play anything. But I bought this mandolin. The idea I pay so much a week. And the idea was to keep on going down to get another school. I took the mandolin back to camp. And a friend of mine called Pony Moore, he could play one. And we used to sit on the steps at night of the barrack room, and he used to play this thing. And the other friend was a cook. And he used to bring a bucket of tea at 6 o'clock at night over it, and we sit there. We sat there till 10 o'clock. Drinking out this bucket of tea off. Obviously it was stone cold at 10 o'clock. But that was our entertainment there. There was nothing to do other than swimming. I used to spend a lot in the baths. And I think I mentioned in India, where we used to get dressed at night with a silk white shirt on and clean trousers, brill cream, everything. And then you just move two beds down to a group in a discussion group, and then he moved to another one, and they were on about different subjects, and then he came back to your bed and undressed and put your mosquito net down, went to bed.
Was there any brothels or anything like that at hand?
No, no. Oh, sorry. Yes, there was. There was a one across the Nile, and it was all Sudanese women. I never went, but a friend of mine went there, and he says, I never seen anything like it. He says, they plait their hair with mud. When she shook her head, he says, I couldn't see her for dust. He says, all the dust. But I never bothered to go over.
What about illnesses and disease? Did you have any problems?
With what?
Illnesses. Were there any particular illnesses there?
Not particular. No, I think we were reasonably healthy. We had a few got sunstroke, the heat exhaustion. But it was a very relaxed way of life. You know, you in 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning, it's cool, you were running around. But when it got hot, you didn't sort of run around. I always remember when you went to toilets, there were the old dry toilets. And you went and sat in there, and the sweat used to run down you with the heat when you shut the door of the toilet. It was when you opened the barrack room door after you'd had them closed at 4 o'clock, and you opened them, and the heat used to hit you, used to come in. Another thing, you used to get the sandstorms. You'd see them building up, you know, thousands of feet high, and you see them moving over, and then eventually they landed on you, and everything went black. Everything was covered in sand. It used to come through the cracks in the doors everywhere. And we used to do guard duty there at the palace in Khartoum. Now, I watched a film the other day. It was on there, and I seen the guard room where we used to do a guard in front of the palace. We went in the palace once, and we seen the stairs where Gordon was killed. There's a brass plate on the step where Gordon was killed by a spear by the natives. And on the side of the Nile near the palace was the gunboat that was going to bring the relief up, but it never arrived in time. And I always remember all along the sides was big thick baulks of timber, like railway sleepers, and I couldn't ever fathom what they were at the time. But then I seen the film, I realised it was to stop the spears and from the off the river banks and that.
Did the Sudanese accept you? How did you get on with the Sudanese?
Well, we didn't. We had very little track with them. You know, we didn't. We never had any dealing with them.
Did they have work to do in the camp, in the barracks?
Yes, we had the Dobie Wallers. The empty in the latrines, and we had again the charwallers, but I always remember a lot of lads, everywhere abroad, they always had dogs as companions, but they used to get monkeys, you'd buy monkeys, and you have a long lead on them, and you can go down the banks of the Nile and take them where these big date trees are, and they go up and they pull a bunch of the date and throw them down, they're monkey. And they used to keep them in the barrack room. What used to happen was they used to hoard things, get brushes, anything, and go up and sit on the rafters and hide their brushes up there. And bloke trying to get his monkey down to bring his brushes to clean his kit, and they wouldn't come down. And I remember once there was a chap, Corporal, I forget his name now, but he was asleep on his bed and he had a massive hairy chest. And this monkey came down, got in his chest, and it was searching around in the hairs, and he'd done, and he woke up. I always remember his face. He got the shock of his life, and he's seen the monkey looking at him.
What kind of duties were you doing? You've mentioned guard duties. What other kind of duties were you doing?
Well, there was the guard duties. There was fatigues. Cleaning the recreation room, officers' mess, the sergeant's mess, dining room, scrubbing floors, tables and things like that.
How were the fatigues given out? Was it a rota or...?
Oh, yes, they were dished out from the company office, and you put on the board your different duties at a certain time. But we didn't get a lot there, because most places abroad, not like England, you had all the local labour used to do most of this sort of thing. The Dobie Wallers used to be out on the veranda, and with a long, I always remember with the long white robes there, and they used to have the iron, it's the big irons with the charcoal in. And I remember one was iron, and then one of these monkeys have always bit his leg, and he hit it with this an iron, a big flat iron, a big charcoal iron, and that was the end of the monkey. There was another place there, we used to do guard duties, and it was a fort. It was just like Borges, or what do you call it, you know, the old, you went in the entrance and you shut the door, and it was a big wall right round with a walkway where the sentries used to walk round the top. And you used to do a turn there, 24 hours, you go in there and they shut the door, lock the gates, and it was an ammunition store, I think. And you used to do 24 and you used to walk round there. Now in there, there was an artillery gun, one of them like from the Boer War effort, a queer looking thing. And an Irish Lance Corporal out the artillery, he was the only one in Khartoum, and he'd been there for years. Now at 12 o'clock every day, this gun used to fire a blank, and that was the time signal for all the Khartoum. Now, there was an aerodrome near, I don't know how many RAF, there was a few RAF there. And once this Lance Corporal, an Irishman he was, the RAF invited them over to the aerodrome to show them round, and they took them up in the plane. Well, they were taking the mickey out of them, you know, and they flew them all upside down, and he'd come back, and he was waving, he was ill. So next day he put his blank in this gun and he filled it with bits of nails and anything he could find it, and he turned it round and aimed it at the Roman RAF camp and fired it. He got the 12 o'clock signal, but he got a load of scrap metal went over the officer's camp. Paddy, your Lance Corporal.
Did you find the boredom difficult to deal with?
Yes, it was. All you'd done, you just sat thinking of the next day and the next, because fortunately you only allowed to do a year there in Khartoum. And you were counting the days until they're moving away. And you looked at the boat there with the smoke coming out, the sign, our turn next, and you used to see it.
But did this lead to any trouble? Was it?
Oh,
no. Any problems?
No. I used to do a lot of running there. I used to put a thick jersey on and do a lot of running out in the desert. And I used to do swimming. I like swimming. We used to have, the five-a-side hockey. Well, to make the game more interesting, it used to be a bottle of lemonade. The winning side, the losing side, had to buy the other team a bottle of lemonade. And you think it was a bar of gold, the way they were going at each other for the game, just for a bottle of lemonade. And then shower, have a shower, and then change and sit in the barrack room and talk. You used to do a lot of talking, discussion, all kinds of things. You get one group, one bloke was very good at telling jokes. Where he got them all from, I don't know, but there was very little, as I say, to keep you occupied.
What memories have you got of your officers in the Sudan?
Well, there was, I remember our officer, Major Rogers, Jock Rogers we call him, he was a major, he was a bachelor. I remember I was in front of him once for not getting my hair cut, and his hair was over his collar, burned over his collar, and I was standing in front of him and he was saying, you know the regulations for haircuts and all the rest, so and so and so and so. And he had his writing pad and he was drawing. He was always sketching. Anyway, I got 7 days, I think it was. And I remember a few days after, somebody, one of the clerks out of the office was talking to me. He said, you see where he was sketching? I said, no. He said, look, it was one of the officers whose wife was pregnant, but not there, you know, from India somewhere. And he had a drawing of her and he was sketching this.
Was he a company commander?
Yes.
Which company was this?
D Company gunners.
So what kind of things were you doing from the army point of view in the Sudan, you personally?
Well, I was doing just in the company. I mean, I was a lance corporal. I was in charge of machine gun section. We had our MG. We used to do fire on the ranges. Another day, I think I showed you a photograph of sitting outside the barrack room, and I think it was a Saturday morning, stripping everything down and cleaning it and getting it angry for the next week.
Which gun was this?
Machine gun, the MG.
You know, the Vickers, was it the Vickers?
The Vickers machine gun. Yeah.
Did it function all right in that heat?
Oh, yes. The only thing I noticed out there, but it was the same in the desert during the war, was the grease was coming out of everything. I mean, the woodwork, normally a rifle in England, it was polished. But there was all the grease was on the other parts, but out there all the grease used to be drawn out of it. And, you know, everything was slidey, you couldn't grease nothing. But it functioned all right, other than when the sand got at it, obviously. I mean.
So what kind of things, as the machine gun section or company, what kind of things were you doing? You were learning to dismantle the gun, put it together again?
Yes, all that. And I used to go out doing training.